grace, peace, and mercy are yours from our God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So what wakes you up in the middle of the night? Pardon me? Your dog. I thought you were going to say your bladder, but I'm not going there. No. Nightmares. Snoring. Yeah, talk to Janet about that. That's pain. Yeah, it seems like the older we get, the more that affects us. Ibuprofen has become my best friend. I mean, there are all kinds of things, you know, that I think wake us up. Sometimes it's our kids. Sometimes it's our relationships or church problems. There are challenges, joys, and sorrows, and fear of the future. Life is complicated. It's challenging. At times it's just downright difficult. And as a disciple of Jesus Christ, life can get even more complicated. You know, it's not so much that our lives are made difficult because we're Christians, because, well, quite frankly, here in America, they're not. But as a child of God, we become more sensitive and aware of the things in our own life that shouldn't be there. Things which don't reflect well on our faith. Things that can make us wonder what God thinks of us because, well, we know how they make us feel. In our gospel lesson this morning, Jesus speaks of some things that don't seem to inspire a whole lot of confidence. He promises those who are his disciples that their lives will be hard, incredibly hard. Even as Jesus spoke those words, the religious authorities were plotting to bring his life to an end. Life seemed to be working to a very, very bad end for him. And in just a few short days, Jesus would be arrested, condemned, and executed. And to his disciples and everyone else, it would appear that his enemies had won. Dead usually stays dead. But after 3 days of celebration by his enemies, Jesus proved them all wrong. And now he rose and he lives now and forever. And because of his life, because he lives, we can know that all of his promises and his words live forever too. Your sin and my sin has the power to also take life toward a very, very bad end. And although it's hard to hear, you and I are part of the problem of this old, dying, rebellious world. When I'm greedy, I'm declaring that I am Lord over my things. And that simply reflects my desire to be God, as I say that I am the owner and not simply the manager of my possessions. When I hold back from loving or forgiving, when I judge another in anger, I'm acting as if I have the right to do what God alone has the ability to do perfectly and justly. But of course, you know, that's what sin is, right? It's telling God that although he says something is good or bad, right or wrong, we just don't care. We're going to do as we please anyway. And that sin brings death. Death of relationships. Death of peace and of hope and of joy. And ultimately, eternal death and separation from God's life and love. But Jesus went down into death for your sin. And in coming back from death, he demonstrated that your sin has been dealt with once and for all. That you don't have to be afraid anymore. That you belong to him. That you're free. Jesus solved our greatest problem by doing what was necessary to reconcile you and me to our God through his life, death, and resurrection. Now that's great news, right? It's what we come here to hear. Jesus has done it all. We're safe in his arms. But as we look at the world around us, as we read the newspaper, watch the news on TV, listen to the radio, it's really disturbing, unsettling. The world Jesus described in that gospel lesson and what life looks like to us now seems out of control and going from bad to worse. Between corrupt politics and governments, natural catastrophes or disasters, uncertainty of our own future, there's a lot to cause us more than a few sleepless nights. But in the midst of it all, God still speaks his promise that he is with us. See, God's promises give us hope and strength and perspective for anything that we'll face in life. We know that. We hold on to that. Is it going to be hard? You bet. Hard things will come. But here's his promise. Not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your lives. See, Jesus gives us something to hold on to right now. He says, I have rescued you. You are mine. And he gives us something to hold on to for the future as well. He says, I will rescue you. You are mine. The world and history, our lives, they're not out of control. God's moving everything toward the day when everyone will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. So why am I talking about this stuff today? Well, as you probably know, the readings that we normally hear each Sunday follow a pattern for the church year. And today and next Sunday mark the end of our church year on the liturgical calendar. And as that year draws to a close, our readings remind us that God has a plan toward which all of history is moving. We confess every day, every Sunday at least, that Jesus will come to judge the living and the dead. But I think most of the time this just kind of passes over our lips. We don't really think about what it really means. But we need to, because here's the reality. Jesus is coming back. We don't know when, but one day he will return and set things right. The reasons for today certainly make sense as we consider that, but there was one of those readings that just doesn't seem to fit the pattern of old things passing away. Our psalm this morning, it begins, "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song." And it seems even more out of place as it continues by not singing about new things. Instead, it sings about old things. It doesn't look so much toward the new future or the future. Instead, it sings about what God has done in the past. And maybe, quite honestly, that's the secret. When things get difficult, when things become discouraging, when life becomes uncertain, we're given confidence for the future when we remember God's faithfulness in the past. Some time ago, I read a book that I found as I was clearing an area of our living room. This was back in Utah. Actually, Janet had gotten tired of seeing my stuff piled up in that section of our living room. She asked me to do something about it. And that's when I found this book. I'd apparently put it there because I was going to read that book, and it got buried. Ever happened to you guys? Out of sight, out of mind. Anyway... In one of the early chapters of that book, the author began talking about leaves. You know, those things that grow on trees and at this time of year create more work as we pick them up, stuff them into bags. The author had this to say about leaves. "Behold a single leaf, so fragile it tears like paper, crushes in your hand to a moist stain, sharply fragrant. Dry, it burns swift and crackling as newsprint. But a leaf may withstand hurricanes, stubbornly clinging to its limb. Pinch its stem and hold it to the light. Its veins are like bonework in silhouette. This single leaf, joined to the tree, drinks poisonous carbon monoxide from the air, and refuses to return in kind, instead spilling out life-giving oxygen. The leaf will actually tilt to catch the sun in order to distill the heat and light and shade the earth. A leaf. God makes these season after season, one after the other, billions upon billions, from the Garden of Eden until the New Jerusalem, most seen by no eye but his own. He does it faithfully. And if he didn't, I wouldn't be alive to tell about it or you to hear. Perhaps of all my many sins against heaven, this ranks with the worst. Until this moment, I've never thanked God for a single leaf. You see, that's the problem with faithfulness. That's the problem with God simply doing what he does moment by moment, day after day, year after year, century after century. Most of us take no notice of his faithfulness. It's just too predictable, too habitual, too routine. It's seen so often that we become blind to it, and it's so expected that we simply take it for granted. We experience amazing things each and every day. Leaves and clouds and eyes and ears and lungs and hearts. These are incredible miracles. But for some reason, they've simply become run-of-the-mill. We're given so much that we now simply expect them to be there, even simply ignore them. I love the way the author put it in the book. He said, "Who among us leapt up this morning as the sun rose, exclaiming, 'Look, look everybody, look, the sun! Here it comes! It's here again!' Or who ran through the house shouting, 'Ah, air, clean, fresh air to fill my lungs, air to shape my words, air to move the clouds or to lift the birds?' Not me. I woke up groaning. And most days, don't we all? But you see, the key to our confidence for the future is God's faithfulness in the past. His promise to us by all the things he has accomplished in the past is that he will faithfully continue to accomplish them in the future. That's who he is, and that's who he will be forever. And so the psalmist gives us this advice. Sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. The Lord has made known his salvation. He has revealed his righteousness in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his steadfast love and faithfulness to us. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and praises. Sing praises to the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with equity." I don't think this is just filler. I don't think it's just something that the psalmist wrote down to just be something you can kind of whistle while, when you're sad or when everything when doing this that everything will be better. I don't think it's that kind of advice. When we're discouraged, down, or worried, we're told that we are to sing an old new song. A new song based on the old things, the things that God has done and continues to do to care for us each and every day. The sun rises in the morning because he loves you. And the leaves form on the trees and perform their duty in providing an oxygen and shade because he loves you. And the rain falls, and the spring and the summer, the fall and the winter come because he loves you. And because he loves you, he also promises that he'll return to judge the earth. Not to come as some spiteful deity, but as a loving God who will make all things right. All because he loves you. And that day is surely coming because he's promised it. I want us to read this together. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. Where I am, you may be also. Amen.